Okay, so this is our second week where we're talking about Proverbs. I think it's our second week talking about Proverbs. So, yeah. So last week we just kind of introduced and we did a little bit of like background behind how the Proverbs are to kind of be read and interpreted. Anybody remember a highlight? Like what's, when you read a proverb, what are we going to keep in mind about Proverbs? What do they mean or how do we use a proverb? Yeah, it's a general principle, and it's not necessarily a rule. And so why would that be important to remember? Remember, for example, I think that if we take a proverb that we looked at one about the slothful or sluggard back on the beginning card, I think on page 2 there, I passed by the field of a sluggard, by the vineyard of a man lacking sense. Behold, it was all overgrown with thorns. The ground was covered with nettles, that stone wall was broken down. So that was the observation. I saw and considered it and looked and received instruction. And then the proverb, the lesson, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber and want like an armed man. So when we impart that wisdom to our kids, what are some things to remember about that?
Well, there's some exceptions. Members of royal families really across the millennia.
Yeah.
Who got lazy kids and they were so well.
Yeah. You guys ever, I know that the kids that I deal with at school, right? They're usually good at like detecting when you make an absolute statement, right? But what about this? Right? What about this? And so we want to make sure that we're explaining to them that although this isn't always true 100% of the time, it's generally true. There's wisdom in observing that. And then we talked about kind of the bad news last week, right? The character, the Proverbs helped to explain to us what folly looks like, okay? What folly looks like. And so kind of where we're at today, right? We talked about how there's wisdom and folly in the Proverbs, the characteristics of foolishness. And so we're going to look at Proverbs about wisdom. So what can we tell our children, what can we teach our children about the Proverbs and what they have to say about wisdom. So let's read through a few of these. I'm depending on you guys to, we'll do a little reading and we'll do some questioning about what we see. Okay. So let's go with Proverbs 23, 24, and 25. We're on page 5. Blessings of wisdom. Okay. Page 5. Let's start the back. Daniel, can you read that one for us?
Yeah. Are we on
Proverbs 23, 24 through 25?
The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice. He who fathers a wise son will be glad in him. Let your father and mother be glad. Let her who bore you rejoice.
Yeah. And so we're seeing the kind of that wisdom, right? A wise son, okay? And then, go ahead, let's read the next one. Morgan, you want?
Proverbs 29:17. Discipline your son and he will make you rich. He will give you delight to your heart.
Yeah, so, right, when we have wise children or when they choose wisely, what does that result in? What do we see from the Proverbs?
Joy to the parents.
Yeah, joy to the parents. We see joy twice, rejoice, gladness, right? Delight.
Yeah, I think observation, like when you look at Christian parents who, let's say, have a son in jail, I mean, that's just a heartbreak to them.
Mm-hmm.
But I know for Becky and I, Julia was off to college and she's made good choices in the first 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely really kind of made just taking away the pain of letting her go, but you see that, I feel a lot better.
Yeah, I think so. I think one of the ways where we've seen this, Carissa and I have experienced this, is we have siblings, and so our kids have cousins, and then also our kids are involved in activities like 4-H and non-church activities, rec sports and stuff like that. And so I think sometimes it's we experience this blessing when it's the parents of children who are interacting with our kids, and then they see them acting in a contrasting behavior. And I think that's something that as a parent, when your child is, if you impart some sort of wisdom to them, there's this gladness when parents make comments or conversations, and you're like, oh yeah, it's great, great joy. Instead of hearing the other way, like, your kid bit my kid or whatever it was, type of thing.
I think the other thing too is like when you look at what really should make a godly parent proud is the wisdom of their children, not do they become a doctor or a lawyer, mm-hmm. but are also a terrible person.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's better to have like a blue collar worker who's really wise, involved in their church, than mm-hmm. A rich fool who is on their third marriage, but they're a doctor and a surgeon.
Right. Right. That's a good question. What are some things that sometimes we can be tempted to rejoice and be glad in our kids that other than them being wise? I mean, there's being a doctor later on, but what about when they're young?
Their accomplishments, academic, athletic.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean,
where they're interested.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with, I mean, we should be glad when they, right? But I think that obvious thing is that if they have those, but they are acting foolishly as well, right? Then that's kind of a misplaced, kind of a hollow joy. So we want them to be wise. It's a blessing. It makes us glad. So how do we make them wise? Let's continue to read in the Proverbs here. Okay. So let's see, where are we at? Go ahead, Andy, hit the back row here. You want to read Proverbs 3, 11 through 12? We're on the bottom of page 5.
My son, do not despise the Lord's discipline or be weary of his reproof. The Lord reproves him whom he loves as a father of a son in whom he delights.
Yeah, so the author, he's speaking right to his my son, and he gives him what commands here? My son, what?
Do not despise the Lord's discipline.
Mm-hmm. So don't despise it, and don't... Don't be weary of it. And so, I think it's interesting, right? It's not necessarily just talking about obeying it, but more like the heart, right? Do you despise it, type of thing, right? And what does he give as the reasoning? Why should you not despise it? Yeah, and I think that's something that as parents, it's good for us to be reminded, but to talk to your children about when we discipline our children, that it's motivated by love, right? That's motivated by this is what's best for you. These proverbs are to give you blessing, all right? And so that's kind of this next question. We're going to get into, but... When you give discipline, I mean, what are some reasons why you might discipline, either in talk or in action, your children? What are the short-term, long-term goals of discipline? Why do we do that?
The short-term is for them to identify their mistakes, and their long-term is so that they don't continue building upon their mistakes.
Yeah, yeah.
I think one thing you do is you teach them the relationship between actions and consequences.
Mm-hmm.
That when you do this action, this consequence will follow.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people just don't understand that, and later on in life it really shows.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's one of the real strengths. And if you're talking about teaching actions and consequences, that's kind of where Proverbs is really focused. It's this tends to happen with this action. This action produces this result. But I mean, when we are really getting that discipline and instruction, a lot of times then we'll move to actually deeper levels to their heart. But oftentimes it's more of a protective, giving them long life. Let's keep reading. Proverbs 20:11. David, you want to get that, or Lauren?
Even a child makes himself known by his acts.
by whether his conduct is pure and upright.
Okay, so this helps us in a lot of ways, especially with younger children, right? How do you know what's going on in your child's heart and their mind?
Times they'll say.
Either they'll say it, right?
Or
I'm mad at you.
Say it.
Yeah. Sometimes they will, right? Even when they can't speak very well, right? They may. How do we know what's going on in their heart? They
run away.
They run away, right? They you see them and say something, then they take off. What else? Maybe if they have siblings, how might you tell what's going on in their heart?
Which sibling they're beating up on.
Yes. Yes. Who's hitting who, or who's crying, or what's going on? So
it really is amazing how violent kids are with each other.
Yes.
We'd never tolerate that with adults.
Yes. Very much so. And I mean, you can see in a lot of the, like we talked about with how kids don't see cause and effect type thing. Behavior is something that your kids can see. And so it's a great opportunity to help them say, this behavior is a display of whatever the emotion, helping them understand that. Whether it's anger, or if they're coveting, or if they're lying. I've had many talks with an unnamed child about what a lie was and what the truth was, and trying to like seem like there wasn't any difference in their brain, mm-hmm. and just explain, okay, this, I'm holding a pen, so if I say I have a pencil, that's a lie. Okay, you know, like just helping to identify to them when you see actions. So when you read this, a child is known by his acts, whether his conduct is pure and upright. I mean, how does that help us when we parent, when we're trying to teach wisdom? How is that a help to us? What does that give us in our understanding?
I think sometimes parents tend to romanticize their children, and they're always explaining away the actions. Like, mm-hmm. Beck and I go on this country walk, and we walk by a friend of ours' house who has an evil demon dog. I mean, this dog will bite at you,
yeah.
snap at you. We know of bikers who go by this house and they just mace the dog as they go by. I don't advocate that, but I do it. But just a super bad dog. And this guy always says he's really a good dog.
Yeah.
He's really a good dog.
Yeah.
And he protests too much, all right?
Yeah.
This is one of the worst dogs I know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so we kind of see parents like, oh, they're really a good kid.
Yeah.
Contrary
deep down.
To, deep down. Contrary to all the evidence that you see.
Deep,
really
deep
a good
down.
Kid. I think this proverb says, well, no, they're not.
Yeah. 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 I think it's good, too, because your kids don't. I mean, especially, I mean, and every time our kids don't know, they don't know who they are, and they're learning all these things from us. And so helping to show them, and it's, you can, this can be used in the positive as well. You know, oh, when you did that, that was so awesome. That was very loving the way that you did this. And just peeping on the encouragement. When you asked this way and did this thing, that was show that you were being obedient or whatever it was. But also at the same time, just explain, you know, when you punch them in the face, that was not being loving, you know, type of, and talking about the consequences. So, all right, let's keep going. Let's look at Proverbs 4, 3 through 4. Okay, 3 through 4. I'm going to go to Jessica. We'll get that one.
When I was a son with my father, a tender, the only one in the sight of my mother, he taught me and said to me, let your heart hold fast my words, keep my commandments, and live.
All right. So how, think about the manner, right? What manner? What do you sense and get from this passage, from the words here? How is wisdom being imparted? Any words stand out?
Taught him by his father.
Mm-hmm. Father. Notice that both father and mother were mentioned there. Mm-hmm. What else? does it say, when I turned 18, my dad took me aside and really taught me about life. What do you think that means? Tender, the only one in the sight of my mother.
Young.
Very young.
Very young. Very young. Right? And you can, you know, there's an urging there, right? Let your heart hold fast my words, keep my commandments, and live. There's this hopefulness, right? This desire for the good. So, what is that, when you think about parenting, when you should start, what you should do, you know, what kind of instruction does this help us get when you think about parenting?
Start teaching early.
Yeah, start teaching early. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one thing with, like, egalitarian parenting where, you know, everybody has, like, equal status. I think this teaches that kids do not have wisdom. They're not born with it. It has to be imparted to them, and that is through the parents imparting it to
mm-hmm.
their kids. Otherwise, you can't expect them to just magically develop it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it says, he taught me, right? He taught me. He didn't wait, wasn't just responding. He was proactive here, taking the lead to teach. And I think that can sometimes be a challenge that we see with parenting, is that it's more like parenting can become just responding to things that we see. Like, oh, that's bad, let's teach that. Oh, that's... don't want that, let's teach that, let's respond, instead of actively taking them, right, when they're very young, very tender, and say, I'm going to teach you, okay, listen to me, let your heart hold fast to my words, and proactively going after the heart of our kids. Let's read. Keep reading, Proverbs 6:20. Levi, you want to get that on?
My son, keep your father's commandment, and forsake not your mother's teaching.
Yeah, again, what do you notice here, right? He tells, what's the prescription?
It's the same as kind of holding fast to the words as keeping your father's commands.
Mm-hmm.
And then similar for the mother.
Yeah, so we notice it's both father and mother there, right? And the keep almost gives the idea of, you know, obedience. So I'm going to command you, keep my commandment. And then not forsaking it is almost like, and continue. So it's not a one time, oh, we've done it, but we need to don't forsake this teaching. I'm kind of revisiting it. Okay. This will be it. Our least controversial proverb. Let's get Proverbs 13:24. Cole, you want to read?
Whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him.
So actions and motivations, right? So let's talk about this one's a contrasting one, right? So you have two different ones. So what do you see? What is an action and the motivation behind that action? This is a pretty strong one. Okay, the action is sparing the rod, and the motivation is hatred, right? And that's contrasted with what?
Discipline and love.
Yeah, discipline is the action versus love. So let's take a minute to talk about, right? Why, maybe you guys have observational experience, right? Why would a lack of discipline be an unloving thing? Okay, imagine parents that, you know, we don't want to discipline them because we love them, right? It's kind of the opposite view. Why would that be an unloving thing to not discipline your child?
Kids don't have the structure they need to really put in perspective the world they think they know. Because, man, I hear all these kinds of stories about how the world is from them, but
yeah.
We need a little bit more guidance
yeah.
to help shape that.
Okay.
Otherwise, they're going to have life teach them the hard way.
Yeah. Yeah, so to help them learn about life.
Mm-hmm. And they continue in destructive choices, whether that's as a two-year-old dumping every toy box out in the room or as a teenager. You know, like if it's taken care of when they're young,
mm-hmm.
and taught, you know, and discipline is given, it can build
mm-hmm.
correctly
mm-hmm.
instead of just exploding.
Yeah.
Same as an example, like from God to us, he disciplines us because he loves us.
Yeah.
So we are passing.
Mm-hmm. We're loving in the same way.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's a good example. So keep going with that. Like, how does God, what can we learn about how God disciplines us and how we can discipline our kids? What do you think?
I think God doesn't discipline us because he's frustrated with us.
Right.
It's like, I've had enough. Like, I've known many non-spanking parents who will spank when they get really fed up and have had enough.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And
yeah.
So then they become anti-spanking because they realize that they only spank when they get fed up and do it in anger.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with the Lord, like, he's not angry with us.
Mm-hmm.
There's no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. So the discipline is really redemptive. It's done out of love. It's to teach us a lesson. It's
mm-hmm.
not. It's not because he's just been fed up with our sin.
Yeah. Notice that when he says it here, whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent. So the choice here boils down to the love or the hatred of the parent towards the child. It's not really grounded in the parent themselves, but in how they are loving or hating of their own child. And I guess, is this the question? Right? We see that it says sparing the rod is one option, and then disciplining him is kind of equated. Either you spare the rod, or it's equating discipline with the rod. So you'll see there's a drawing of what do we mean by discipline. And so in the Proverbs, oftentimes the discipline can mean the rod of discipline. Okay.
I've seen the rod too kind of be described as like the rod of a shepherd, and so it's not necessarily always a negative,
mm-hmm.
but it could be just like the guiding, and like in discipline as well, discipline doesn't always have to have a negative connotation. It could just be a pattern of behaviors
mm-hmm.
that you're using to guide them.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think we'll see, like when you talk about what it could mean, oftentimes that we have discipline and instruction, and so oftentimes the discipline is referring to addressing of a sin or a behavior that needs to be corrected, and then the instruction is oftentimes pointing to the guiding into teaching them how they ought to, and so it's kind of a balance of those two things. We can't just discipline, don't do this, don't do this, you can't do this. But we can't just instruct as well. This is what you ought to do. We have to be able to teach them what they ought to do and then discipline them and correct them when they are straying from that. Okay. Let's keep reading. We've got another proverb here on discipline. Hang on, Peter. Proverbs 19:18. Jared, you want to get that one?
Discipline your son, for there is hope. Do not set your heart on putting him to death.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of wording it, right? Discipline your son, for there is hope. Do not set your heart on putting him to death. So what's being contrasted here? What are the actions? Yeah, discipline and putting to death. So that's pretty strong discipline. And so what's the reasoning behind, right? Why should you discipline according to this proverb?
I mean, it's if you tolerate sin, right? If you don't, if you tolerate sin, you're not going to discipline them. Just like if God doesn't tolerate sin, that's why he disciplines us.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, if you're going to tolerate the sin in your child's life, you're not going to discipline them. But if you don't tolerate sin,
Mm-hmm. And I guess sometimes there's the idea that certain behaviors are unavoidable. Oh, it's the terrible twos, you know? Oh, well, when they're a teenager, you know, like you hear a lot of these comments, wait till they're this, you know, because that's always happens. What is this, what's this proverb telling us?
There's hope.
There's hope. Yeah, there is hope. Discipline your son, there is hope. So we can be hopeful that our discipline, right, will have an effect, that it will be a blessing to our kids. Okay, let's read some of these, get a feel for how like the failure to discipline. So let's see. Proverbs 1:32. Leah, you want to get that one? And then Ben, you want to get 10:27? And then we'll come around. Allison, you want to get 21:25 from Proverbs? So we're going to look at maybe a couple places, right? How can failure to discipline, because it says here, right, discipline or else we're doing what?
Hating.
We're what? In Proverbs 19:18, discipline your son or we're doing what?
Putting him to death.
Putting him to death. Okay. Leah, what do we got? Proverbs 1:32.
Okay. For the simple are killed by their turning away, and the complacency of fools destroys them.
Right. We have foolish and they're turning away. And we have destruction. Okay. Ben, what about 10:27?
The fear of the Lord prolongs life, but the years of the wicked will be short.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then Allison, what about 21:25?
The desire of the sluggard kills him, for his hands refuse to labor.
Yeah. Right. So it can be hard for our kids, like you said, understanding the world, but even to understand the consequences of what may be down the road. Right. So let's talk about, take that idea and that view of parenting, the role of parenting, the need for discipline, and how might that push against some of kind of the, maybe think about parenting issues in maybe your own life, lives of friends, coworkers, people that you know and interact with. How does that kind of grate against other ways of parenting?
It's not that they might grow out of it.
Yeah, it's just a phase.
Yeah.
There's that big push on self-confidence, and if you discipline them, you're hurting their self-confidence when they're not.
You're stunting them. Their self-esteem, even.
Yeah. I think a lot of the people that are in prison today, or, you know, they didn't have that discipline as a kid, mm-hmm. just didn't learn to submit to authority.
Yeah, very much so.
Well, I think, like many humans, if we're set on our own, we want immediate satisfaction. I think with discipline, you learn more long-term. Mm-hmm. And if children are set on their own ways, they just learn, I just want that immediate satisfaction, not mm-hmm. what can occur from it, or, you know, if I don't do that, what good things can come. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the legal system can hamper or restrict the ability to parent as maybe a parent would see fit for one reason or another.
Yes.
But yes.
Yes.
When kids are well deserving of being mm-hmm. able to receive that love and discipline.
Yes.
It's one of those things that... you know, it's amazing the types of entitlement and attitudes that come mm-hmm. when they are not properly disciplined.
Yeah. Yeah. Very much so.
Our world views that as abusive parenting based on, you know, a group of people who did inappropriately use that, mm-hmm. not a lovingly, mm-hmm. you know, self-controlled discipline. It's mm-hmm. this extreme of an abusive parent.
Right.
Put on a biblical choice.
And I think we have to realize, one thing that's very important to realize is that if we're disciplining, so specifically if you're referring to, you know, spanking of children, all of the inappropriate, all the things that are visible that you're going to see are going to be inappropriate. Because you're not, if you're appropriately disciplining your children, you're not doing it, responding in public right in the middle of soccer field or whatever, you know, you're seeing, when people see this inappropriate thing, those are often the most visible outbursts of frustration, those type of things. And so it's very difficult for people to understand, right, without properly taught. I remember just having lots of conversations with godly parents about what's the right way to discipline your kid in a way that honors them, shows them, you know, great love, preserves their dignity, is not out of anger, those type of things. And it's not something that you are going to generally observe like in other senses of parenting. So we often see an example, we can see at church or in classrooms, the way, oh, that was great, the way that you interacted with your son or daughter. And so there's this, it can be a hindrance sometimes for us as parents when we don't have the clarity and good example and instruction in this area that we might have in other areas of parenting.
And I think the other thing too is the process of disciplining your kids is really inconvenient and it's not fun at all.
Yeah.
My dad, he used to say, "This will hurt me, but you know, this will hurt me more than it hurts you," which was never true.
Right.
I think my backside hurts a lot more than the
right.
hand right now.
Right.
But yeah, so you look at your kid acts up at Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, great. Right, acts up, and so sometimes you just like it's just your whole life. Sometimes it's just easier to say, "I'm just going to give them grace."
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm all about giving your kids grace, but not when you're kind of abdicating your responsibility. So
yeah.
I think there just has to be a firm conviction.
Yeah.
That this really is for their good.
Mm-hmm.
And is my reason for not doing it for their good or
mm-hmm.
my good?
Yeah. Very much so. I think one analogy that I see with my kids, I think of this often, is I worked with in a context with young children at one time where I was working with lots of kids who were coming from very dysfunctional homes, and the training person talked about how when in a real setting where you send kids out to a playground and there's fencing and it's a new area, oftentimes they'll run to the fences and push on the fences and kind of try and climb on the fences. And if the fences are very sturdy and stable and they don't move, after a while they just go to playing. And but if they're real rickety and start to fall down, the kids kind of huddle more towards the building. You know, there's an uncertainty of, am I safe out here? And I just see in our kids oftentimes, especially when they're really young, they're testing to see what's really, where you're solid, in a sense. And so many times, like you said, you're out at Walmart or at eating in a restaurant, and they act in a way that they maybe don't often do at home when there's easier access to discipline time. And so just being prepared and taking the time and doing that. And sometimes it's like you said, it's a warning, like, oh hey, next time we come, let's be ready to deal with this appropriately. But it definitely is a lesson that our kids are looking for, they're longing for, and they're wanting to know that they have this safe boundary, that rather what when I do this, I know my parents are going to do this in response. So let's talk about Proverbs 22:6, right? This is a familiar one. Okay, Joe, you want to read that one?
Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it.
Okay, right. It's a general observation that is fairly clear, right? What does it tell us about our parenting?
You have to train them.
Yeah, we have to train them. So that's the command: train up the child in the way he should go. But and then what do we learn about our training, too?
Needs a stick.
Okay. And so in general, that's the observation: is that it will. Sometimes there's the idea that, oh, when your kids go to college, or oh, when they do this, then it's all going to disappear, right? But in general, the kids are going to follow and grow up to be the way that you train them to be.
Yeah, it's important to take this as a proverb, not a promise.
Right. So that's kind of the next part. So this is also, you know, there's a note there about how it's speaking of a dedication that you're saying. This is the purpose. This is your purpose. This is what your role is to be. Child training involved narrowing the behavior from the evil to godliness. And so I think many people, yes, if we do take it as a promise, we run into some, can be several traps. What might be a trap that would happen if we view, okay, if I do this, right, train up my child, they're not going to depart. What could be wrong with that?
It overlooks the gift of free will.
Okay. In the sense of, like, your kids or?
Well, I mean, like, you can do everything right, mm-hmm. according to parenting, and going back on what was said earlier, you know, there's Christian parents who have children in jail.
Yeah.
And they obviously didn't train their child to go to jail.
Yeah.
It's not like, hey, I'm going to train you how to break the law.
Right.
Yeah.
But the child's free will mm-hmm. allowed them to deviate from that training.
So the children, like you said, the children are not always going to do exactly as they were raised to do. And how might that be really for the parents to realize? Like, how would a parent feel in that situation that believes this was a promise?
They would probably feel like they failed.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. What else? I mean, there's a couple other things just in terms of how we parent that this, at a deeper level, there's a kind of an implication here that we need to, so we need to take into account the child as well.
We're training our children with the thought that they are God's and we are not, you know, in control, but trusting God with that, then it's a little easier to, you know, trust the plan mm-hmm. of their life.
Right.
And be faithful to do our part.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, to a lesser degree, you can see this if you've got someone that you really care about, an unsaved person, and you're sharing the gospel with them. At some point, you know that only God can change that person's heart, and only God can bring salvation to that person. And if we believe that, you know, if it's not me, then that person's never going to be saved. I think to a greater degree, we can have that feeling with our kids, that if we take this as the promise, well, it's all up to me if I get it right. If I don't get it right, and there's no hope, type of thing. But what, I mean, can this motivate us, right? What's the good of the proverb? Like, what's the great part about this? What does it tell us? How can this be a motivating thing?
We have a part to play and we need to be consistent.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think, and even if they don't instantly respond in the way that you think that they should, they'll still remember your words.
Mm-hmm.
And those things will come back to them. And mm-hmm. hopefully they'll cling to them as you hope. And mm-hmm. as the proverb says, nine times, or I don't know, it doesn't say that. But but generally speaking, they will come back to the words.
Right.
When they know they need it, the guidance.
Yeah.
So as you were talking about these families, that the Christian families that have kids who are in prison or whatever,
mm-hmm.
Like on the flip side of that, I think of families that I know that have a gob of kids and they're all following the Lord and teaching their kids to do the same. And so, like, I don't know, like, I struggle with that thought of, I think training has a huge role in the child's life because I've seen families that, like, go above and beyond,
mm-hmm.
like, way above and beyond what the normal family does.
Mm-hmm.
And it has an impact on them. And I think God has the majority role in that as well.
Yes.
I mean, I fully believe that.
Right.
I'm not saying it's the parents that save them, but, yeah. like, I can think of, like, three families that I've been thinking about, like, everybody's talking, and all their kids follow the Lord.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
And God's blessed them. Yeah. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's, I don't know what the, where the teeter is there.
No, yeah. I mean, like, I think that's the point of what.
There has to be some correlation to.
And I think that's the point of the proverb,
yeah,
right? Is that what you, this, the author saw what you're seeing. And he's saying to us that although it's not a guarantee, there, I would say many people, even outside the church, observe that, you know, the hand that rocks the cradle
mm-hmm.
kind of rules the world type of thing. That parenting is the number one most powerful way It is the means by which the faith is transferred.
Yep.
It is the means by which your child incurs and develops their character. And no schooling or sports or anything can even compete with. No government program. Even the work within the church, I would say, you know, has a hard time coming close to the influence of the parent. And so when we see this, train up your child in the way they should go, and then, when they're old, they'll not depart from it. It's the tool, it's the powerful mechanism. Can you add that, anything?
Yeah, I think sometimes we can be so focused on the exceptions to this that we forget the truism of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to keep in mind the exceptions so that nobody becomes self-righteous.
Like, good thing I did it.
What do you do wrong? Yeah. Right? And just understanding that salvation is a gift of God, is by God's grace. It's not
mm-hmm.
because we, you know, did it right that God is obligated to reward us
mm-hmm.
by, you know, saving
mm-hmm.
our kids.
But
I can even say, even if a kid is doesn't become a Christian, you know, a lot of times they're disciplined under authority. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Even some, they might still flourish in life to a certain extent
mm-hmm.
because of the way they were raised. Even
mm-hmm.
if it's not salvation, it might be some of the other virtues. And I've seen this before too, where the kid's not a Christian, but it's like they live the Christian life without Christianity. Does that make sense?
Yeah, they have more opportunity to, you know, their life lasts longer, so they have more opportunity to, again, experience the possibility of salvation. But yeah, there's that common grace in the sense that they experience a better, more blessing.
Child does grow up with some biblical discipline and instruction and doesn't come to know the Lord until much later. Like, I'm thinking about my case here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was less to repent of than there could have been if
mm-hmm.
I had gone way far down that path, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of times we use the gardening as a good metaphor for parenting, and, you know, maybe you're trying to, like Carissa for many years tried to grow strawberries, you know, and we pretty much failed every time. But, you know, we would weed and we would do this and we would do this and put the net over for the birds or whatever. But, like, we had really good ground. And if some strawberries wanted to grow, eventually they would have had a great life there, right? And so, you know, we were the exception. But when you create that fertile ground and you remove all the weeds and you're always planting and tilling the soil, it's kind of like you said. There's room for the gospel to flourish once it takes root, once that seed takes root, for sure.
I think it's really important, you know, what Andy was saying about these godly families creating godly families. And, you know, Brian and I both look at our parents and think, wow, like, that's awesome. But it gives hope when you're dealing with lots of young children and behaviors
mm-hmm.
that, like, there's hope that we can produce
mm-hmm.
children who follow the word.
Yeah.
Even if it's not a rule.
Right.
But just the hope of that gives so much motivation in the years where, like, is anything sticking
yeah.
with these people?
In the trenches.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the beautiful things, too, about being in a church. You can see parents who are at different stages. Like, oh, I remember that. And you can see those kids, how they've grown up. And, like, I know that when our kids were really young, we would have parents that were 2 years older, 3 years older. And so they would be going through things just a few years ahead of us. And it was a very hopeful time. And we could talk about, what did you do for this stage? What did you do at this stage? You know, or we really have trouble with this. And, oh, well, this is one thing we noticed or observed. And it's very, very hopeful to see the kids growing up. And, oh, wow. It's also encouraging when sometimes we would be away or with friends and they'd come back and see, and like you find out that sometimes people had more concerns about your kids than you realize. Oh, you know, Luke turned out a lot better than we were kind of worried. Or like they'd say, he's you've really made progress, you know, like
really
come around. Or one of our children. But yeah, it's a very hopeful thing to think about that. Okay, let's read, maybe we'll wrap up with reading kind of some of these examples from Scripture that deal with parenting. Okay, we're going to deal with a couple of these. Okay, let's see. Let's go 1 Samuel 2, 22 through 25 and 29. Let's see. You want to get that one? Yeah.
Now Eli was very old, and he kept hearing all that his sons were doing to all Israel, and how they lay with the women who were serving at the entrance to the tent of meeting. And he said to them, "Why do you do such things? For I hear of your evil doing dealings from all these people. No, my sons, it is no good report that I hear the people of the Lord spreading abroad. If someone sins against a man, God will mediate for him. But if someone sins against the Lord, who can intercede for him?" But they would not listen to their voice, to the voice of their father, for it was the will of the Lord to put them to death. Do you want me to keep going?
Yeah, let's go ahead and read that next part.
In verse 29, the Lord rebukes Eli with, "Why then do you scorn my sacrifices and my offerings that I commanded for my dwelling, and honor your sons above me by fattening yourselves on the choicest parts of every offering of my people Israel?"
Okay, yeah. So, like, in that case, we've got Eli, which is the father, and he's got his sons who are serving as the priests, and we can see the behavior there, right? And what do we, the behavior of the sons who are laying with the women who are serving at the entrance, and then we also see their mistreatment of the sacrifices and offerings. They were taking, basically taking everything that was good for themselves, and then giving the least and the kind of the leftovers to the people who are bringing the sacrifices. So they're just living high and living that self-focused there off of their position. And so what do we see the comment about the parenting? How is Eli parenting there? Yeah, and how did they respond to the voice of their father? Yeah, shut up, Dad. Not any real discipline there. Let's read one more. 1 Kings 5 and 6. Now, Adonijah, the son of Haggith, exalted himself, saying, "I will be king." And he prepared for himself chariots and horsemen and 50 men to run before him. His father had never at any time displeased him by asking, "Why have you done thus and so?" He was also a very handsome man, and he was born next after Absalom. So that comment there, we see the kind of the absence, never displeased. Yeah, David was kind of failing in his fathering right there. So
on these two examples, the sons were quite a bit older, and I mean, there comes a point, I suppose, when you missed your opportunity to shape the way your kid grows up.
Yeah, very much so. Mm-hmm. Very much so. And we can see that, you know, that we're seeing, God is drawing a link here, right, to show you're seeing their behavior as they've grown up. And God is drawing back and saying, this is a little commentary on this. There's a lot tied to the way in which their father failed to discipline them, train them. So we see kind of a negative example, kind of like compared to the modern day, we were saying the son's in prison type of thing. Well, you got him rebelling against the king, or, you know, sleeping with the people in the temple.
It's interesting, the father would not displease his sons.
Yeah.
Sooner or later, your kids are going to be displeased with you if you do what's right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if we call that like a child-centered home today, but...
Yeah.
I think so.
It's easier. Mm-hmm. Just make them look more...
Yeah, and I think that people can... We can get confused on the good of our child being the goal or the happiness of the child. And so since kids don't know what's good for them, oftentimes the thing that they want is the thing that's going to be destructive to them. And so that child-centered home oftentimes places the happiness of the child above the goodness of what's good for them. So we'll kind of stop right here. When we come in next time, we'll get a little bit more specific, talk again about the heart of the parent and the way to approach that discipline and instruction. So we're in the imparting of wisdom stage. How do we impart wisdom? We know that we ought to do it. It's our role as parents. It's good for our kids. So that's going to be where we